This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, a very busy day here in our nation's capital. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments this morning in the Masterpiece Cake Shop versus the Colorado Civil Rights Commission case. The justices appear to be sharply divided. We'll talk with John Scruggs, senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF represents Jack Phillips, owner of the Masterpiece Cake Shop, and John was in the courtroom. He'll join us in just a moment. And a lot of speculation about what President Trump will announce tomorrow as it pertains to the U.S. Embassy in Israel moving from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. What would be the ramifications of such a move? We'll talk with Greg Roman, director of the Middle East Forum. He knows the topic well. Also, Joel Rosenberg, New York Times best-selling author and Middle East expert, will be with us to discuss how neighboring countries in the Middle East might react to such an announcement. Also, we're continuing our year-end matching challenge all the way through the end of December. Any amount you donate to FRC receives a matching gift from a generous donor. Your gift supports our efforts to bring you this program Monday through Friday, Washington Watch Radio, supported strictly through the donations of partners like you all across America. If you'd like to make a contribution during the course of this program, all you have to do, call the number. One number now, 866-372-7234. We'll have folks standing by to take your call. Again, that number, 866-372-7234. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. I encourage you, if you're on Twitter, hey, go ahead and check that out. You get usually a daily devotion as well as other items like what took place this morning as I was at the Supreme Court early today with several members of Congress and other conservative leaders for a rally on the steps of the court while oral arguments were being presented inside and the highly anticipated case, Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Now, the Colorado baker who simply declined to bake a wedding cake in 2012, Jack Phillips, for a same-sex couple, did so based upon his rights of conscience and his deeply held personal beliefs, his religious beliefs. Now, Craig and Mullins, the two men who wanted the wedding cake, filed a complaint with the Colorado Civil Rights Commission alleging that Jack Phillips had violated the state's Anti-Discrimination Act. Craig and Mullins won the case, and Phillips and his business were ordered to change their policy regarding serving same-sex weddings, as well as to take mandatory diversity training for themselves and their employees. John Scruggs, senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, was in the courtroom today for the oral arguments, and he joins us now here on Washington Watch. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you were in the courtroom for the oral arguments. Interesting reading the transcripts of the arguments. Some unexpected grilling on both sides from some of the justices.
And no doubt, there were some difficult questions coming from all sides. It almost had an electric feeling in the room itself. The argument lived up to the hype in terms of the contentious nature of the issues and the questions that were coming. The Chief Justice had to extend the time that was normally allotted because there were so many questions. And it was a fascinating argument to be there. But I think Christian Wagner, who represented Jack Phillips, did a great job of articulating this is not about who comes in the door. It's about not promoting certain messages you disagree with. And that was one of the overarching themes of the argument. Some justices were buying that theme. Some were not. But overall, I think it was a favorable day for Jack Phillips, given just what went on and the questions that were asked.
Now, John, this is a very significant case. Now, it's not unprecedented for the court to extend the time and allow more time for oral arguments, but it doesn't happen every day. And so I think that itself speaks to the significance of this case. How important is this when it comes to the issue of the freedom of speech and the freedom of religion, in your view?
I think it's hugely important, and some of the questions that were asked illustrated that. One question that the Chief Justice asked the a lawyer for the state of Colorado, was, well, can the state compel a Catholic legal service, a pro bono Catholic legal service, if they offer their services to everyone but couldn't make arguments promoting same-sex marriage? And the Colorado lawyer said, yes, that could be compelled under the law. So you have those type of issues that seem to strike right at the heart of compelling someone, in this case a religious person in the example, to really speak against the core of their beliefs. But it really doesn't have to be that. It could be someone of a non-faith, of a different faith. It cuts across all these ideological boundaries. When the government can tell you what you can, what you must say on core issues like marriage, that's a scary thing. And justices were really concerned, I think, with some of the answers the state was putting forth.
Well, John, it would seem that once you pierce that veil of, as you say, compelling citizens to do something that is counter to their beliefs. In this case, we're talking about a cake baker, and the issue is his artistic ability, which is an expression of his speech, which is tied to his views and his values. And if you can compel him to do that, it would seem that you have entered really a slippery slope, and there's really no end to what the government could then force you to do.
I think that's exactly right. In fact, one question that came from Justice Ginsburg, in fact. Justice Ginsburg asked the state, well, could you compel a cake artist to write, God bless this marriage, on a cake? And the Colorado attorney said, yes, you could compel that. Flat out text on you know, that would apply to a printer, a calligrapher. Another question that came was, could a calligrapher be forced to write wedding vows for a same-sex couple endorsing same-sex marriage? And the attorney said yes. And those are scary things, right?
When I mean, that sounds like to me, John, that sounds like indentured servitude. Like you have no choice in the matter. Yes, they're compensating you. They're giving you something. But you have no say as to what you do with your talent, your ability, and your skills.
And even worse, not just that type of servitude based off of something that's irrelevant, but something that cuts against the core of who you are, to proclaim messages that violate the core of your faith. It was very concerning. Another interesting thing that really stuck out at the argument was the questions that Justice Kennedy asked. As your audience well knows, Justice Kennedy is often a swing vote in these types of cases, and he raised very interesting questions about how the state was singling out and really discriminating against Jack Phillips. At one point, Justice Kennedy said, tolerance is essential in a free society, and it seems that the state has not been tolerant or respectful of Mr. Phillips' religious beliefs. That was an enormous statement that really almost sucked the air out of the room in the courtroom to say, wow, Justice Kennedy views this case potentially, I mean, we just never know what they're going to rule, but potentially Justice Kennedy views this case as not about discrimination, but about people of faith living out their beliefs in earnest attempts to, you know, tolerate all people, but just not being able to express the messages they disagree with.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad you've joined us on this. Let's see, what is today? Tuesday? It's losing track. It's been a long week already. It's only Tuesday. The website, TonyPerkins.com. My guest was in the courtroom today, John Scruggs. He was there while the oral arguments were going on, 90 minutes worth of oral arguments. I was outside at a rally with members of Congress and supporters of Jack Phillips. I mean, when you look at this, John, you know, we've had some of these issues in the last year where we had designers who refused to make a dress for Melania Trump because they disagreed with the president's politics. We've seen, you can take another example, we've seen drug manufacturers refusing to sell the drugs required for lethal injection to states to carry out capital punishment cases because they have a moral objection to capital punishment. So it appears that the only place that certain governments want to impose this, you know, this compelling interest of the state seems to be on the issue of same-sex marriage.
Yeah, and not just that on that issue, but on one viewpoint on that issue, which is very concerning. So you have another issue that was raised that kind of comes along those lines was, in this case, there were three other bakeries that received a request to make a cake criticizing same-sex marriage. And the state of Colorado came in and said, well, those bakeries, they can decline to create those custom cakes. They can decline to express those messages. But then it turns around and tells Jack Phillips, hey, Jack, you have to create a cake endorsing same-sex marriage. Now, the discrepancy there is just enormous, and it's something the justices picked up on and said, that doesn't seem fair at all. The state isn't being neutral and fair here. It's playing favorites. Which is unfortunate in our society, where we can not disagree about viewpoints. We have to view everything as an attempt at discrimination, and that's just not the case. And I think that's something the justices were struggling over, that they were acknowledging that, look, we live in a diverse society. But we have to be able to have discussions without, assuming the worst in other people. And that's exactly what happened with Jack Phillips. He would serve all different people. He welcomed them all in their store, including people from the LGBT community. He just couldn't promote certain messages.
Well, let me ask you about that, John, because you're talking about the inconsistency of the Civil Rights Commission there and how they've applied the law. But Jack Phillips, consistent in that this was not the only message that he refused to promote or create a cake for. He was consistent with his views. He would not communicate other messages that were incompatible with those religious views that he holds.
That's exactly right. And then I think that highlights it's not about the person who walks in the door. It's about what message he's asked to create. So he wouldn't create messages promoting Halloween, for example, because that's just inconsistent with his conscience. Messages, supporting racism or intolerance of other people. I mean, he just wouldn't do
that. Or sexually explicit messages.
Vulgar messages, exactly. He had a uniform rule on those things because he couldn't say those messages. And that's, just like those other cake artists couldn't, make a cake criticizing same-sex marriage. And that's within their prerogative. But Jack should have the same right. As a speaker, he should be the one choosing what he says and does not say. It should not be the government coming in and saying, no, we're making that choice for you.
John Scruggs, senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, representing Jack Phillips. Kristen Wagner, who's been on the program before, she was his main attorney there this morning arguing on his behalf. John, let me ask you, any surprises this morning?
I wouldn't say there are two enormous surprises. I would say that one question, like I noted earlier from Justice Ginsburg, that I think all the justices, there was a consensus that they felt very uncomfortable in any situation where the government was compelling text. So that was an interesting point that, I drew a lot of encouragement from.
Okay. John Scruggs, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate your insights.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Obviously, we'll be following this closely. We filed a brief in that case. The decision next spring, but we will be watching. All right, coming up next, growing speculation that President Trump will make a major announcement tomorrow regarding Israel and the embassy. Don't go away. We're talking about it next.
This Christmas season, give with purpose and meaning, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. At Family Research Council, our mission is to promote these three core values in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. We are working to ensure that our religious liberty is defended in the public square, that human life at all stages is protected, and that family values are promoted in our country's public policies. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for our future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to Family Research Council, your gift will be matched, meaning it will be doubled by a generous donor. And any donation is tax deductible. Give with purpose this Christmas season. Text FRC to 444-999. Again, that is text FRC to 444-999. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year. Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC in our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Merry Christmas and welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. As I mentioned, if you'd like to be a part of partnering with the Family Research Council between now and the end of December, every gift you make will be matched by a generous donor. So give us a call, 866-372-7234. We've got folks standing by to take your call. You've heard me talk about this, the Republican Party platform. I was on the platform committee and a part of writing a significant portion of it. One of the issues that we addressed was the issue of Israel. And I'm going to quote from the party platform because I think it's going to be significant for our discussion that we're about to have. This quoting from page 47 of the party's platform, GOP platform, which, by the way, the president has embraced, and we've seen it in many, many different areas. Quoting from the platform, quote, "We recognize Jerusalem as the eternal and indivisible capital of the Jewish state and call for the American embassy to be moved there in fulfillment of U.S. law. The president expected to make a major announcement tomorrow regarding the capital of Jerusalem, capital of Israel, and the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem." Joining me now is Greg Roman, director of the Middle East Forum, who is in Washington, D.C., is in the mix on this issue, and knows quite a bit about the matter. Greg, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me today, Tony, and happy holidays.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Greg, let me ask you this question. I know you know, I was at the White House yesterday, and you know they're not giving away what the president's going to say tomorrow. But the president was due to sign the waiver, which has to be signed every 6 months and has for many, many years, leaving the embassy in Tel Aviv. He's not signed that waiver, which I believe is was due the 1st of December. Any idea what the president may say tomorrow?
So we've been pushing for this issue as an organization, and I think the larger pro-Israel community since 1995, when this law was instituted, the Jerusalem Embassy Relocation Act. And I think that President Trump is an individual who keeps to his promises. back in June, he signed the waiver because he was still getting his feet wet in terms of understanding Middle East policy. But after the last 6 months that have gone by, he's seen Palestinian intransigence, whether it be denying the Jewish right to prayer at the Temple Mount, or whether it be seeing the lack of cooperation from Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, or his recent merger with Hamas, a terror organization which has killed not just Israelis, but also Americans. And I think the White House has had enough to say, we will not allow another country or another non-state actor dictate what our sovereignty is and how we exercise our diplomatic relations with other countries. And in doing so, he's decided to not sign that waiver, to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, which is as simple as changing a sign on the current U.S. consulate that's there next to the old city, and to instruct his ambassador, David Friedman, to begin planning of moving an actual larger facility from Tel Aviv, where the embassy currently is, and moving it over to Jerusalem. Now, whether it's in East Jerusalem or West Jerusalem, details are skittish right now, but we will probably find out more tomorrow after this announcement in the White House.
So let me ask you, Greg, from the standpoint of, I mean, actually, I've got Rocket Alert on my phone, my iPhone, just from my trips over to Israel, and it was going off today, already certain rocket attacks taking place. How might the Palestinians respond to this? I mean, is this going to move us closer to to peace in the area, or is this going to create more division?
Well, I have an article that was actually just published about an hour ago in The Hill, which is titled, U.S. recognition of Jerusalem as the eternal capital of the Jewish state, one step closer to peace. Because the game that the Palestinians have been playing for the last 100 years, since even the advent of a Palestinian national identity, which is even questionable in and of itself, is one in which I think it's forcing them to acknowledge reality, to not award them for their intransigence. I mean, there was an announcement that was made by the Palestinian Authority today saying that there would be 3 days of rage that would follow this announcement. I mean, do you really want to expect the fact that there might have been 362 days of bliss otherwise? I don't think so.
I think the Palestinian authorities may not realize that they're dealing with a different American leader. I think, as you alluded to earlier, I don't think this administration is going to allow someone else to dictate our policy. As you said, this president has proven, more so than any president I've seen in my adult life, who has kept his word in the promises that he made. He embraced the party platform. The party platform speaks very clearly to this issue. He's, as you said, he's made pledges and commitments in other places. I don't think this president's going to be intimidated by threats of violence by those in the Middle East.
No, and he's not. And you know, if the violence is going to happen over this, or if it's going to happen over the right to egalitarian prayer, or it's going to happen because some individual terrorist wakes up in the morning and decides to explode himself in a market, it's not so much asking where are the catalytic factors that affect U.S. decision-making in the Middle East, or what's the Israeli decision-making. This country has a policy that was adopted into law back in 1995, and that national security waiver has been acting as a political football for subsequent administrations to pass the buck onto the next president. President Trump's the only one who was brave enough to actually embrace that law, to embrace the political platform of the Republican Party. And dare I not say the Democrats have the same position as well. If you look at their platform, this is a bipartisan issue. It's something where there's multinational consensus. And President Trump is the only one who was willing to actually move that policy forward. And that's why we get here today. So anyone blaming violence on the president's position should only look at themselves, rather than trying to look at something that's U.S. sovereignty being enacted. And it's not like the American embassy in any other country is not in the capital. This is an outlier that has to be corrected.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, I would say, Greg, that this is an example of Ronald Reagan's motto of peace through strength, by making decisions that are in the best interest of the United States, our allies, and as you said, in keeping with the law. Greg Roman, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
All right, Greg Roman with the Middle East Forum. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, when we come back, New York Times bestselling author and Middle East expert and good friend Joel Rosenberg joins me. Joel, in fact, I was with Joel last night for dinner with some Egyptian officials. We were in the Middle East about 3 or 4 weeks ago together. We're going to talk with him about what implications might this have for relationships with some of our other allies in the Middle East. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day by working to advance family values in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. The internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. Learn more at frc.org/internships.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, a lot happening today. We were talking about the oral arguments, the Supreme Court, and a major, major religious freedom case, free speech case. Also talking about the president's anticipated announcement tomorrow regarding Jerusalem as the eternal and indivisible capital of the Jewish state, and a call for the American embassy to be moved there in fulfillment of U.S. law. That's language right out of the Republican Party platform. Also, movement on the tax reform bill, conference committee being assembled with the House and Senate working together to come up with a compromise. Some are hopeful they'll have that by next week, and the House will be able to get out of town and head home for Christmas, so we'll see. All right, joining me now, Joel Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author, a Middle East expert, good friend of mine, to discuss further the implications of such an announcement with some of our other allies in the Middle East. Joel, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a long time since we saw each other last night for dinner, but
that's right.
I understand you're now in Chicago. Is that right?
I am, yes. With my publisher at Tyndale.
Working on yet another edition of your fiction collection?
Indeed. We got a book coming out, The Kremlin Conspiracy, in March, and starting to map out the next book in the series, next novel.
Unfortunately, it seems like your fiction seems to be more prophetic than it does fiction.
Well, you know, I'm trying to write about worst-case scenarios that I hope never happen, but I want to make them as realistic and terrifying as possible. And unfortunately, sometimes they get close to a little too close to reality.
Well, I mean, having read your book before we went to Jordan, your last book, the was it The Third Target?
Third Target, then The First Hostage, and Without Warning. Yeah, that series.
Without Warning. You know, I almost didn't go to Jordan after reading it. But good book. Can't put it down.
Glad you came anyway.
Yes. Well, speaking of Jordan, we were just speaking with Greg Roman regarding the anticipation of the president making an announcement tomorrow regarding Jerusalem, and I was quoting from just a moment ago, quoting from the Republican Party platform, which says, "We recognize Jerusalem as the eternal and indivisible capital of the Jewish state and call for the American embassy to be moved there in fulfillment of U.S. law." Some anticipating the president's going to make an announcement in keeping with that tomorrow. How might that play out in the Middle East?
Well, this is the challenge, is that this has been a bipartisan issue for more than 20 years, right? The law that states unequivocally that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel and that the U.S. embassy will be moved there was a law passed with bipartisan support in 1995, signed by President Bill Clinton. This is not some right-wing, you know, this is some conservative pet project, right? Jerusalem has been the capital of the Jewish people since King David was told by God to make it so 3,000 years ago. And yes, there is it's enormously complicated and controversial issue in the Middle East. I get that. And certainly our friends in Egypt and Jordan and, of course, our Palestinian friends, they're not comfortable with this, and some of them are outright opposed. I understand that. But the United States has the right, the sovereign right, to put its embassy anywhere it wants. And the strange thing is that we're even having the conversation. Where are embassies? They're in the capital of whatever country the United States has a relationship with. And Jerusalem is the declared capital of Israel. And this should not preclude the possibility that if Israel wants to make a deal with the Palestinians and the Palestinians will actually really make a peace treaty with Israel and they want to make some deal where the Palestinians have part of Jerusalem or something, that's Israel and the Palestinian sovereign right to make that decision. But from an American perspective, this is really fixing a historic wrong. I can't think of another country in the world where the American embassy isn't in the capital.
Right. And so, I mean, we're talking about this was a law that was passed 22 years ago. And what's happened since then is every 6 months, a president has signed a waiver saying, you know, basically saying, I know what the law says, but for certain reasons, we're not going to move it right now.
Well, and there's a specific reason. The provision in the law was for national security reasons. And so what I just said, I believe, and I say that now as both an American citizen and, as you know, an Israeli citizen, and my family and I live in Jerusalem. So there are very real-world implications for us if Jerusalem now blows up and the region blows up because of this decision. So I'm not unaware or unsympathetic to the real national security concerns. In theory, American embassies all over the world could be attacked by radical Islamists because of this. It's still the right thing to do, but we should be very careful in how we do it. And I pray for peace in Jerusalem more than ever, more than I ever have.
Yeah. Well, we can't allow bullies or thugs to keep us from doing, as you said, what other country do we not have our embassy in the capital city? And as you say, this is this goes back to King David, and I think for evangelicals in particular, those who believe the Bible, this is could be a significant announcement tomorrow. Joel Rosenberg, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right, Joel Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author and Middle East expert. All right, when we come back, we're going to hear from you. What do you think? Should the president make the announcement that the U.S. Embassy is going to be in Jerusalem? You're next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Are you interested in making a real impact in public policy and culture? And are you looking for an internship experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience our country's rich history and culture and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day. Further, you will develop the skills required to advance faith, family, and freedom in our nation. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. Learn more about the FRC internship program at frc.org/internships. Again, that is frc.org/internships.
Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC and our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air, there's a feeling of Christmas. Children laughing.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. They changed the song up on. That's Dean Martin singing there. I was waiting for Bing Crosby. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, the number to call. Here's what we're going to talk about. Number one, if you'd like to partner with us, you can do so at that number. But also, if you want to weigh in on our conversation today, the president, it's anticipated that tomorrow he's going to make a major announcement regarding the embassy, the U.S. embassy in Israel, currently in Tel Aviv, moving it to Jerusalem, recognizing Jerusalem as the, again, quoting from the party platform, the eternal and indivisible capital of the Jewish state. What do you think? You think he should make that announcement? Think it's important? I'd be interested to know, because I like to actually have in my conversations that I have with folks at the White House, it's always actually helpful to be able to relate to them what we're hearing. And you help me go all across the country without ever leaving the building here in Washington, D.C. by calling in and giving us your opinion. So it's not only are you weighing in and folks hearing this on the 250-plus stations that carry this program across the country, but it enables me to actually tell the White House what evangelicals are thinking. Christians, conservatives, who listen to this program. 866-372-7234. And we're going to go first to West Virginia, where Country is on the line. Country, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I wanted to comment on the government being able to compel people, individuals, entities to say certain things that they don't agree with. About the with the baker.
Right.
If it stands that governments can't tell businesses to say things that they don't agree with, what's stopping someone from telling somebody, okay, well, you have to print up a flyer that says, you denounce Christianity and you profess allegiance to Allah and Islam, on that line. And then, like, a while back, I don't know what state it was that was telling the family planning centers that they had to, inform people who were coming in for, guidance or whatnot, that they had to, tell those people about the abortions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where does it stop?
Well, you're right. When once we cross this line and we allow government to compel speech, compel action that is contrary to one's religious beliefs or rights of conscience, I don't think there is an end to it. But right now what we see, country, is that these tend to be isolated around the issue of same-sex marriage. I mean, that's where the governments in some of these liberal jurisdictions, and it's usually through these human rights commissions that have been created, that they are using these to compel action and speech in these, like I said, in these specific cases. And as John Scruggs pointed out earlier, it's only to compel speech and behavior that is favorable of same-sex marriage. So it is, once we as a society agree to this by our acquiescence, then there's no end to where it might go. Country, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. You know, it's interesting. I just encountered this, I think it was when I was having a conversation with Ajit Pai, the chairman of the FCC, yesterday. I'm sorry, last week, we were talking about Twitter and Twitter refusing service to a member of Congress, Congressman Marsha Blackburn, I believe it was, who was putting up ads on her Twitter feed, and they, because the message was about abortion, which they disagreed with, they took it down. And they've done that for other people on other issues related to, their political views, especially on the same issue of human sexuality. So it is clearly cutting one way. And look, I'm like for instance, and I said this before, the designers who didn't want to make the dresses for Melania Trump. Hey, I don't think you should compel people, and nor did the president and his wife. We're not for compelling people. Hey, if you don't want to do business with me, not a problem. You don't want my money, I'll go down the street to someone who shares my values. And that's the case here with a baker. They could have went next door. They could have gone down the street to another baker. But that wasn't the issue. They wanted to force Jack Phillips, a Christian, to violate his faith, and they wanted to use the power of government to do it. That is wrong. All right, back on the issue of the embassy, let's go to Leanne in Missouri. Leanne, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, I apologize if I missed why our embassy was placed in Tel Aviv to begin with.
Well, it's been there.
But why was it not put where it was supposed to be to begin with?
Well, originally, the Jewish state did not include, when they were first established back in 1948, they didn't have Jerusalem. That didn't come about until later, when they were able to take Jerusalem in the 67 war. And so that's the reason it hasn't been moved, but there was an effort to recognize that, as I said, back in 1995. And so ever since then, they've just, for quote-unquote national security reasons, they have not moved it. So now this president is reportedly ready to make that announcement that it's going to happen. You support that?
I mean, I'm all for President Trump and what he stands for. But, of course, it scares me at the same time for us and for those people of Jerusalem in a holy place, that it would attract attention, to terrorist activity.
Very likely that there's going to be an uptick in some activity. As I mentioned earlier today, I saw these rocket attacks in certain parts of Israel. But we can't allow, you know, thugs, terrorists to determine what our policies are going to be. And as was pointed out, every other country, we have our capital, or our embassy, rather, in their capital city. And it's not a matter that Israel recognizes Jerusalem as their capital city, so this is not a change for them. It's simply a change for the United States.
Well, how do they feel about it?
They're in support of it. They're in support because they...
I'm in support too, then.
All right. Well, Leanne, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. Let's go to Evelyn in Iowa. Evelyn, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes. I think you've just answered my question. How does Prime Minister Netanyahu feel about this? Because the repercussions may be great.
Well, they're in support of this, and I know that the administration working very closely with them on this move. Yes, short term, will there be some issues? Probably so. But I think the significance they see for this long term is that the United States is recognizing Jerusalem as the capital city of Israel. And I think they see that as far exceeding any short-term complications that could come from that announcement.
Thank you. I like that answer. Long-term, maybe good. So thank you.
All right, Evelyn. Thanks so much for listening. Appreciate the call. 866-372-7234. Going to try to get to a few more calls here. North Carolina, Deandra. Is that right, Deandra? Deandra, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I think the position of our president and realistically our nation to stand with Israel in acknowledging the fact that Jerusalem is the capital of the Israeli state, and as the Word of God tells us, you know, that as we pray for Jerusalem, as we bless them, God will bless us. And of course, our foreign policy should not be dictated by terrorist groups of what they do, but we should send a message, and that narrative should really state that, hey, we stand with Israel.
Very good. I think for us, as Christians, as evangelicals, as those who believe the Bible, I mean, the Word is very clear on that. And I will underscore that given the fact that this announcement may come tomorrow, we certainly should heed the instruction of Scripture to be praying for the peace of Jerusalem. Deandra, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. Let's go to Jason in Ohio. Jason, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, hello.
Jason, how you doing?
I just wanted to comment on the pretty good, and I appreciate your show. It's very informative, and I've learned a lot from you. I'd like to make a comment on the cake issue. I remember for years going into stores and seeing signs that said, we have the right to refuse service for any reason, the management. I mean, whatever happened to that? I'll hang up and let you make your comments on it.
All right, Jason, thanks so much for the call. Yeah, I remember no shoes, no shirt, no service. Part of this goes back to the 1964 Civil Rights Act, and there's certain protected, what are called protected classes. that you cannot discriminate based upon age, race, national origin. And so what many and so that's one of the reasons you don't see people refusing service to people based upon their color, based upon the country that they're from. Those things have long been unacceptable in our society, as they should be. This has become what they're doing is they have, and this was done by the Obama administration basically unilaterally to try to expand that 1964 Civil Rights Act to include sexual orientation, gender identity, so that it's gone from sex to these other classes to where they would say that because you're not recognizing someone's same-sex marriage, you're discriminating against a protected class. Now, that's I don't think this is settled law by any means. In fact, that was the whole issue behind Obama's bathroom edicts, where he was ordering the Department of Education to tell schools and the Justice Department to tell schools that they had to allow transgenders to use whatever bathroom they wanted. This administration pulled that back, and we've seen the changes there. Look, I don't think you should be able to discriminate, all right? I use the word discriminate. That would mean if someone is, because they look as if they're gay or they identify as gay, that you would deny them service. I first off, I don't think that's Christian. I think as Christians, we're to serve everyone equally. But we're talking about an issue of using one's artistic ability to convey a message. A wedding. You're engaging in a sacred ceremony according to Scripture. And so you have the Bible is very clear on this. In fact, I always have some people saying, where does the Bible say anything about marriage being a man and a woman and Jesus identifying, male and female? Well, it's in Matthew chapter 19, verses 4 through 6. He says, have you not read from the beginning that God created the male and female? For that reason, a man will leave his mother and father and cling to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And with that, you have, as these marriage, as we very, Scripture is very clear what marriage is, and you have people who are in the business to provide for weddings, and they cannot violate their faith they would be violating their faith if they were to make a same-sex wedding cake, or they were to take pictures, or make a dress, or whatever it might be. And to compel them to do that is wrong. And that's what we see here in these particular cases. There must be an accommodation for religious faith. And it's not like these folks couldn't get what they wanted someplace else. They were doing this intentionally in many, many cases. Hopefully the court will get this right, and we need to be praying that they will. All right, folks, out of time. Sorry we didn't get to the rest of the calls, but we'll be talking about this tomorrow. After the president makes his announcement, we'll be discussing it tomorrow here on Washington Watch, Lord willing. I do hope you'll be back. Again, if you'd like to be a part of partnering with the Family Research Council, give us a call. We've got folks standing by, 866-372-7234. Until tomorrow, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.